It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 402 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. It's another great crowdfunding doubleheader week here at the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I start out talking with Travis Horseman from the Amicula series, and he's got an ultimate version that is being funded right now on Kickstarter. We talk about the book and how it came to be, as well as what we can expect from him in the future, and what new materials is in this great book coming out about Amiculus. Then everything wraps up with Gilbert Deltrez, who has a great comic coming out called Grom, or Galactic Rodents of Mayhem, Volume 1. This one's on Indiegogo, however. It's not on Kickstarter yet. It's described as a space sci-fi opera inspired by the always awesome Saturday morning cartoons of the 90s. The three main characters are Bash, Ripple, and Mona Lisa, and they have to fight against the menacing Dark Raider. We talk about how you could actually appear in one of these books, as well as the many formats that you can access it through Indiegogo as well. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Rome can still be revived. Its glory can live again. But I must learn Amiculus' secrets. Who he was. Why he did what he did. And how he began.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Travis Horseman, the creator behind Amiculus, which now is you have a Kickstarter going for that, Travis. How's it going?
It's going really well. We had a good first day, having a robust second day.
Good.
Looking forward to getting as many people out as possible, naturally.
Okay. Now, just for people who may not have listened to our discussions in the past, what is Amiculus about?
Well, let me go into my elevator pitch. Amiculus is essentially, it's a graphic novel series set during the fall of Rome. But the twist is that in this version, Rome didn't fall. It was pushed by a mysterious figure from the shadows. It's sort of a lost history of Rome, sort of suggesting that this figure, this mysterious figure known only as Amiculus, was responsible for destroying Rome. And it's kind of I like to say that it's in the same vein, the same spirit as V for Vendetta or Assassin's Creed, mm-hmm. Just set in the – it's a vigilante character sort of positioned against the corrupt rulers of a crumbling empire dedicated to bringing the whole system down.
Now, people always fuss at me because I don't give this information right away, so I'm going to do it better this time. This comes to a conclusion, according to Kickstarter, Saturday, November 2 at midnight, looks like.
Yep.
And your goal is, what I can see, is $14,350.
Yep, that's been in line with a few of our other campaigns. It's actually a little less ambitious than my 2016 campaign, which was to finish the series. Originally, it was done in a three-book series, and I kickstarted each book. Mm-hmm. And now I'm doing the omnibus version in this one.
You know, when I see this is a 240-page collection.
That is correct.
And you've got a new story.
Yeah. Yes. Actually, that's another purpose of this campaign is the initial arc of the series is complete, but I am using this partly to bridge into essentially a sequel series, or I guess a prequel, really, because it all takes place. It takes place right before Amiculus comes on the scene. And in a way, this series sort of explains how Amiculus came to be in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because so we're stepping back. This is sort of the way Hollywood does things these days. We do a prequel after we have a successful thing.
Yeah.
That sounds like what you're doing, so that's pretty good. Now, Is the same artist doing the new story as done the other ones in the past?
Absolutely. It's my artist Giancarlo Caracuzzo is on board to do this 24-page new chapter and ostensibly the series when we get to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's good. Now, you and I have talked a little bit about this stuff in the past, so I don't want to spend too much time on things we've already discussed. But on the other hand, I think it's really important for people to know, what was it about this subject that got you to write this story? Because, you know, some people look at history as a four-letter word, and I like it. I enjoy finding out stuff I don't know. And so for me, I read the three books, and I really enjoyed them. What was it that motivated you to go into these good things?
Well, I have a way of looking at history that really brings it alive to me more than it does for a lot of people, partly because I feel like I can see the drama and the narrative to it that isn't really conveyed. I hate to say it. I mean, you know, a lot of schools, I think history is typically taught by people who don't care for history in the first place either. Yeah. They don't see that these were living, breathing people, flawed mess. I mean, the history of, I mean, like ancient Rome is, I mean, you wonder where, like, you wonder where the just insane stuff that happens in Game of Thrones came from. I mean, they literally took some of the things in that series from things that actually happened in ancient Rome, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. some of it. I mean, this is based on things that happened to real people. And, I mean, these people were extravagant. They were extravagant. They were brutal. They were charismatic. They were just as crazy and flawed and interesting as, you know, anything in a narrative. I mean, that's why they call truth is stranger than fiction, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, very true. Very true. Now, Amiculus himself is a literary contrivance, is the way I like to put it. I don't think there really was an Amiculus, was this? But he's a storytelling device that you're using to help make it more interesting.
To a degree, yeah. I mean, I posed this as a, like I said, a lost, quote unquote, with quotes around it, because it positions itself like, this is the version of history that you know, this is the part that you never heard. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it grounds itself in the actual narrative and then takes a left turn. Mm-hmm. So, I do take liberties with that, definitely, but I feel like it's a thing that allows me to get, you know, it allows me to build the narrative and really allow the characters to drive the story rather than the events.
Now, it looks like one of the main characters is Romulus, and not everybody knows who Romulus is. Do you want to talk a little bit about who he was?
Sure. And this is not the same Romulus as, like, the one raised by wolves along with Remus, who founded Rome. This is an ironic thing because Romulus Augustulus was the last emperor of the Western Roman Empire. He had the name of both the founder of Rome and Rome's first emperor, but which is ironic because he was the last. And he was also a 12-year-old boy who was being controlled by his father, sort of being ruled as a puppet. And that's one of the things that drew me to this. It's like finding like the really human stories in this. I mean, on the page, this is his story only accounts for like maybe a paragraph, like a page at most. He's a footnote. Mm-hmm. But then there's that relationship, you know, between him and his father, how a father could basically control a son like he was a puppet. That relationship couldn't possibly have been healthy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I started thinking about that, and it's like I started thinking about what Romulus thought about having he's supposed to be the most powerful man in the world, and he's nothing. You know, he's just he's a prop. Mm-hmm. And how would he I mean, he doesn't have a voice in the histories or anything. So how does he feel like about this? What would he do, say, to try to get out of it? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
Do you get into his eventual conclusion, shall we say, in the story?
Oh, yes. What happens, I mean, in the histories, this is one of the cool things about it, too, is that when he surrenders to the barbarians when they come storming in and take over everything, but they don't kill him. They banish him. Hmm. He goes off to live his out his life in the southern part of Italy, and then nobody even knows when he died, which that was another great thing too. That was another thing that's like, ooh, let's speculate on that too. You know, let's see what happened. What little nuances can we add there to make that, you know, add that to our speculative story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I was fascinated to when I was looking over the Kickstarter page, it talks about the fact that Amiculus actually started as a 10-page play that you wrote for a college project.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting to me. I mean, did you guys ever get to perform the play?
Thankfully, no. It was really bad. Oh. I mean, it was really just like it was an exercise more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I decided to write this about a subject that I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And as a play, it was not good. But, you know, it's one of those things that I stored away and came back to years later. As I was writing another, I tried writing full-length novels, but they just didn't come alive for me, you know? Writing things in a narrative form, I don't know why. I was having difficulty with this full-length novel that I was working on, and it's like, well, you know, I don't really see a lot of things. I have a tendency to visualize most of my ideas, you know? I'm inspired visually, which made me think, you know, I like comics. Why don't I try writing this as a comic book or as a graphic novel? And it's like, well, this idea is way too long. I mean, I want to test it before I even attempt to do anything with this. So why don't I take some other idea and just do a 20-page story? And it's like, well, they got this play. Maybe I can do that as a quick story, see how it looks, and, you know, move on to this other project. And as you know, that 20-page story turned into 240 pages. Mm-hmm. Like
there,
they do.
There was life in that.
There was. It took over. The story took over and, you know, it became what it was going to become.
It's interesting because that's when you know a story has legs, as I like to say, is that things start to happen, and the more you get into the story and the more you write, the more interesting it becomes to you. And you can sense that when you read the book, because there's a lot of interest going on. There's a lot of really interesting little twists and turns along the way, too, that I really like, because it's a well-done book.
Thank you.
It's now. I always have to ask people. Now you're doing this as the collected version of it.
Yes.
Is that going to be available in stores? How's this going to work?
Well, this version it's called the Ultimate Omnibus. In part because it's the last thing I'm going to be doing with this series, with this particular storyline. This is the pinnacle. But this omnibus is actually going to be an extended version that's only going to Kickstarter backers. It's going to contain about 40 pages of addition of, I mean, I'm redesigning it, getting a new cover art, new logo. It's going to be a new, map of the world of Amiculus, like the Mediterranean, the Roman world at the time of Amiculus, just a different look, new content, new additional art. It's going to be, it's a reimagining. And then after that, I'm going to do a standard sale version that's 200 pages that I will, eventually use to phase out the individual volumes. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was the way I intended it to be in the first place, but it just was too big to tackle all at once. So now I'm there. So
good.
I'm almost there, you know, still have this Kickstarter to go, right?
Yes, yeah, that's very good. Because as I mentioned to you before we started to record, I've already pledged towards it, and I can't wait to get the good volume, the final volume, because I enjoy the other ones just as they were. You know, it's great when history comes alive like that, and it's so interesting, because you know that this is one of the things I love about comics is that it takes me places that I don't know much about.
Yeah.
And the Roman Empire was something I don't understand much about. At least I didn't before I started to read your book. And I began to like Romulus himself is an interesting character, a 12-year-old boy who's basically the most powerful person in the world. that stuff is all really, just so interesting to me about that. So I really enjoyed reading the three books because they were really very well done. See, now this new story, I'm dying to see what you're going to do with that because, I having read these before, I kind of have a fair idea, what kinds of things. But now, doing the old step backward to move forward, I think that's going to be really fascinating about that. It's from what the website, the Kickstarter says, it's that there's somebody who's trying to understand Amiculus more, and therefore they have to understand where Amiculus comes from.
Yes.
What I get. Is that the basics of the story?
Well, the story that you're talking about, the new 24-page story that's going to launch the new sequel series, it's called Amiculus Domina. Mm-hmm. And the thing with this is... This is a version of the story that actually traces where Amiculus came from the perspective of a character who's given kind of short shrift in the initial series. Mm-hmm. You have the boy emperor Romulus, and you have the relationship with his father Orestes, which is a very brutal, very abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. But then in the story, you also have his mother, who shows up for a very short amount of time and then is almost like a footnote in the story. Well, this new series is from her point of view. And it's about how she plays a part in Amiculus coming into existence.
That's so interesting because back in those days, today is different. The women haven't completely reached where they should be, but... Mm-hmm. It's better than it used to be. I mean, women in, as I understand, Roman culture were not. I don't want to say this in something that's going to be said incorrectly, but they weren't. They didn't end up being rulers or the upper crust. Largely, they were the people who went along with the men, as I understand it.
Well, it's definitely a thing that's shown in this. I mean, there's nothing that ever mentions her historically. The only proof that we have that she existed was that Romulus existed. Hmm. We don't know anything about her. Hmm. So, in a way she's almost as much of a tabula rasa as Romulus himself, more so actually. And, her character, is entirely speculative. I mean, the way I'm writing her is entirely speculative, but it's the way it fits into the narrative with everything else. I think it'll be a really compelling story because one of the things, this first chapter, this story, it goes back. You may remember from reading the omnibus. This doesn't spoil anything, by the way, for anyone. But there's a point in Amiculus where Romulus is remembering the happiest day of his life, and it is this day on the beach, where his family is there and they're having fun and they're just splashing in the water and having a great day, and this is the moment right before everything goes bad. And he remembers that as being not just the happiest day of his life, but the last day that he was happy. And now this story goes back to that day and it reexamines it from the point of view of Romulus's mother, who is in that, she's there at the beach with them, interacting and everything. And it shows that what actually happened was a much darker, much, much more precariously dangerous situation than he knew.
Oh, so we see from the beginning, we see it from Romulus's perspective, and now we get to see it from hers. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, precisely. And this sets the tone. This story sets the tone for the whole series. Mm-hmm. And, it sets the start of that arc, basically, which is this precariousness and this danger, which she is in and that Romulus is in, that she sort of shields him from and is trying to help him get escape from, in a way. That is sort of the thread through that entire arc that will go forward.
So I don't want you to spoil much on this, but see, now you've got me interested as to where you're going to go. in the next series. And are you going to kickstart that one too? Is that what's going to happen? After this gets done, you'll get your stuff done for this one, and then you'll move to another Kickstarter. Is that what will happen?
Oh yeah, I might take a bit of a pause in between to develop it a bit more. I mean, I have the story is there. It just there are some other projects that I am planning to approach. Maybe take a brief, a quick break, and then plunge back into this story because I don't want my whole focus necessarily to be all Amiculous all the time. Like right. That's the reason why I did Sugar Creek there as kind of a as a bit of a palate cleanser too.
Mm-hmm. So see now, is this going to be historical? Maybe that's the way I should approach it. I don't want to ask questions and give away anything, but is this also going to be somewhat historical in nature?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, okay. It basically covers, the big thing that happens in this story, like the big historical event is, basically, Orestes, Romulus's father, overthrows the previous emperor, and this is the point where Romulus becomes the emperor. It's his passage from normal, happy little kid to this miserable puppet, basically. Mm-hmm. This is the moment. This is when it happens. And then, I mean, it goes from that moment on the beach up until the point where Amiculus makes his debut at the disastrous Battle of Ticinum.
Hmm. Okay, because just starting to fill in some of the gaps, because one of the questions I had, how does a father lose the throne to his own son? Normally it's when there's somebody gets killed and then somebody takes over. If he's still alive, are you going to explore that transition in this other story?
Well, that's the fascinating thing, is that the father never wants to be the emperor. He sets his son up as the emperor because at that point in history, the person who actually wields the power is the general of the armies.
Mm.
The one who the magister militum, that's who Orestes was. He controlled the armies, and the emperor was basically little more than a prop that right. he sort of an accessory that he basically controlled, sort of like almost as a badge of his power.
I'm starting to get a sense of where this might be going, in the sense that, because there's always tension between political and military branches of government.
Yep.
And I guess what he's trying to do, the father, is trying to make sure that tension no longer exists because he can manipulate them through his son.
Yep.
I'm starting to get the story here. Okay. See, that was one of the things I was really interested in finding out about. So I'm really glad you're going that way, because that's going to be something I'm going to really be anxious to read. I want to see how that happens. Because, it's so interesting in this time today where politics is such a big deal. People rarely govern as so much as they interact with politicians and stuff like that, and it sounds like a lot of that was still true back in Rome for this mm-hmm. to go on. So that's interesting. That's going to be fascinating. Are going to be allegorical things to today, or is this going to be purely look at the past?
I like to let people draw their own conclusions on that. I mean, one of the things that drew me to this period so much is because of all the ancient societies, I feel like Rome is probably the closest in their way of thinking and perhaps their trajectory to us now, mm-hmm. which that's for better or for worse, because they didn't do so well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because, I think you and I have talked about this in the past, too, the sense that Rome just suddenly tends to vanish. It seems to break up and fall apart, and other countries and stuff came out of the remnants of what Rome was.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that's so fascinating, and that's going to be so interesting to see how that all plays out. Because see, and there's another thing about this that really gets me, is that there's a cover that I see on the website, and it shows the mother, and she's got a robe on, mm-hmm. and she's standing, and in the background there appear to be six Amiculi, shall we say. And so now, of course, we're going to Let's see. Now I got to know. I don't want to ask anything because I don't want to spoil anything. But I just have a funny feeling. I got an idea where we might be heading with this good stuff. But, you know, hey, it's a good mystery is so much better than you know, people often just blurt out stuff and say stuff and from the beginning. I talked with James Tynion the IV one time, and I got a huge kick because he was doing this year-long story in Batman. And at 26 issues into it, he revealed who the bad guy was, the big bad, as they like to say.
Yeah.
And people were complaining to him, why did it take so long? And he started to laugh, just like you. He goes, well, you know, that's part of the story, is to find out who that is, you know, to get there, and then we move on from that point. And I get a sense that's what you're kind of doing with this. You're introducing things that are going to have real importance as we move forward with this.
Yeah.
I like that. It's going to be
fun. Yeah. That's one of the things about. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I really enjoy. I love the sense that I get from you, and I get better writers. I really enjoy is I get a sense we're going in a specific direction. You know where you're going, and we're working to go that direction to get where we need to go. And that's one thing I liked about the Miklas story, and I'm looking forward to other stuff because, sometimes you know people write like they're getting in the car and they're driving through a neighborhood and they have no idea where they're going.
Yeah.
And you lose interest after a while, you know. But with your stuff, I'm always interested to see where we're going next. What's the next thing that's going to happen? Because it's all heading for a purpose, and I like that.
Yeah. No, thank you. Yeah, I mean, everything that I do is probably deliberative, maybe more deliberative than it is sometimes useful to be because, you know, I definitely – Yeah, deliberative is another way of saying procrastinatory in other circumstances, but, you know.
But see, I like when you guys have a – I always think back to the New Teen Titans with Marv Wolfman and George Perez.
Yeah.
I always felt like they were heading someplace. You know, they introduced Tara, and Tara, the young girl, turns out to be not the pristine girl that everybody expects she's going to be.
Right.
But you could feel the train moving in that direction. You see certain things and certain things happen. And I remember sitting there going like, oh my gosh, this isn't going to be, because people were always saying she was Kitty Pryde
at yeah.
that point, which yeah. she wasn't. So I got a huge kick out of, you know, that's with yours. I always like the fact that we're going somewhere. I really like that. It's going to be great fun to do.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, be good for that. Now, you mentioned your other book. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Talk about the other book that you did. You did a Kickstarter for that one too, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was a very different departure from Amiculus. It was called Sugar Creek. It was a one-shot horror comic. Probably about 32, 35, somewhere between. I can't remember the exact length. It's been a minute, but it's a 30-odd page story about – set in modern times in Ohio, actually in 2015 in Ohio. And it's a horror story based on the premise that if you subject a physical place repeatedly to acts of violence, like if it is a place where violent acts happen over and over and over again, not just for years or centuries but thousands of years, then that place will eventually become self-aware and it will become predatory and it will gain a taste for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then later on, some people build a town on top of it and have no idea that it's there. And, you know, hilarity ensues, by which I mean chaos, carnage, and death.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever collect that? Has that come out in like a single volume, or they're only available in individual issues?
Well, that one is, like I said, that's just a one-shot story.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That one, yes, it is actually out. It has been published. It's on Amazon and through my website, amiculusrome.com. Mm-hmm. You can pick one up if you want. Yeah, that was one. The Kickstarter did not succeed, but I was still able to produce the actual book part of it. Mm-hmm. There was another part of the project where it was kind of like an illustrated journal by one of the characters that acted as a run-up to the events in that, mm-hmm. that I wasn't able to produce. But I'm actually writing that like chapter by chapter on my website. Like I'm writing installations of that story there, which you can check out.
Okay. So tell people what your website is or how to get there.
Yeah. Well, my website is amiculusrome.com. That's AmiculusRome.com. And it's got both, I mean, right on the front page is a link to the current Kickstarter for Amiculus and the web series, the web story that I'm writing about like the prequel to Sugar Creek. Mm-hmm. I'm all about the prequels.
Wait a minute, so you're going to do a prequel to that one too?
Well, like I said, with that one, there's a character in the story that's central to the story who is, it's kind of his personal journal that he's writing, and we basically get to see through his eyes what happens as he discovers this entity, very slowly realizes what a tremendous threat it is and how, and his desperate attempts to stop it, which it manages to thwart one after another, right up until the day of the big catastrophe that happens in the actual comic of Sugar Creek.
Okay, so that's I don't remember if I ever got the full version of that one. I think I got to see a couple pages of it, but I don't think I got to read the whole book. I'm supposed to get after that one because I'd like to see how that, you know, resolves.
Yeah.
Because your stories are always fascinating to me because I don't know where you're going, and it's always a prerequisite for me. I need to, if I can tell where you're going, I'm not going to bother.
Well, that's a good thing to have, yeah.
Because there used to be a show called Heart to Heart that I would watch just because I like to see a happily married couple on the television.
Yeah.
But I could sit there and 5 minutes into it, I could say, okay, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And the hour would finally come to the end, and I go, yeah, they did it. They did everything that I expected. But I'd rather be surprised. I'd rather not know. You know,
yeah.
That's a good thing. So that's available to people who want to get a hold of that. So what are you going to work on next, though? You're talking about taking a break and doing some other projects. Are there things you can talk about at this point? Or are they things that are in the, you know, the iron's going in the fire that you can't really talk about it yet?
Oh yeah, I can absolutely talk about it. I got another ancient world project that I plan on working on. It's about the Oracle at Delphi. Mm-hmm. That one's it's a story. That one, that's a fun one I'm looking forward to work on, too. It's called Pythia, The Last Oracle, and it's about – that one's based on the last prophecy of the Oracle of Delphi right before Christianity destroys the cult. Mm-hmm. And in this story, it's another one of those sort of history you never heard sort of things where this is around the time where the cult is about to be revived. A Roman emperor who's a pagan has taken over, and he's decided he's going to revive the cult. And the oracle is getting ready to deliver a prophecy to him that will either make or break that will either make him or break him. And they're insisting, you know, they have to be very careful that they do it right in order to gain his favor. Mm-hmm. But then this oracle she has a vision where she's visited by her past versions of her, by the past oracles, where they're telling her that you cannot allow this to succeed. Your job is not to save the Oracle of Delphi was dedicated to the god Apollo. Mm-hmm. And this would save his cult. And they're basically saying, your job is not to save Apollo. Your job is to kill him.
Hmm.
Because, wow. Yeah, it turns out that in this version of it, the oracles at one time were dedicated to Gaia, mm-hmm. the Earth. Mm-hmm. And Apollo came in. This is mythologically true. Apollo came in, slew her champion, and took it over for himself. And ever after, they were dedicated to him. Well, the oracles always remained faithful to the Earth, and there was a cold war going on between Gaia and Apollo throughout the centuries, and now is their opportunity to kill him for good. So that's what this is about.
Wow. That'll be interesting. Is that going to be a comic book series like Amiculus? A one
yeah.
shot? Okay.
That one's going to be, I'm thinking that one's probably going to be a 5 or 6 issue series, maybe about 120, 140 pages overall.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I know you go to a lot of conventions and stuff, too, because I follow you on Facebook, and I think that I get to see when you go into places. Are you going to be doing more conventions?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I just got done with Cartoon Crossroads Columbus, which is kind of a really great independent cartoon, independent comic Comic-Con. That's Jeff Smith, the writer of the author of Bone, he lives here in Columbus, and he put it on. It was a really great one. They actually had as a keynote, they had Mike Mignola there, which was very exciting. Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people like him. He did I have to say, unfortunately, he did a Batman statue that I just didn't care for.
Yeah.
You know, because Mignola, when he does things, he usually has like your shoulders are sloping down and stuff. And I don't see Batman that way. And so for me, I always kind of looked at that and said, I don't know if I buy that one. But his other stuff, I mean, his BPRD and Hellboy and all that stuff just shines to this day,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I'm, big fan. Yeah, I would say that his pacing, the way he paces stories and the way he establishes mood is something that I tried to build into Amiculus a little bit. It was very influential in how I like to do it because I love the way he does that. You know?
Yeah.
Love the way he does that.
Yeah, it's just I can now just say that I kind of can see some of those things going along, because there's mystery built into it, and there's kind of a darkness. That you have to pay attention to when things are happening. So that's really cool. Yeah. So you've been to that one. What other ones are coming?
I have a tendency to stay regional mostly. Probably the biggest show that I've been to up to this point was probably Small Press Expo in Bethesda, Maryland. But I have a Wizard World coming up here in Columbus. And then in November, I'm going to be at GalaxyCon in Louisville.
Oh,
that may very well be my last show of the year. Mm-hmm. They don't typically tend to do them in December.
right.
So, for good reason, probably.
Yeah, I think we went to GalaxyCon, I think, in Raleigh, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
A couple months ago. And so I don't know if we're going to get to that one again. But, I liked GalaxyCon real well. That, you know, the whole history of that. They got bought out by somebody. It used to be a... what was the name of it? SuperCon. And then somebody else bought it, and they turned it into GalaxyCon.
Yep.
So I really enjoyed Raleigh when we were there. I thought it was a really good con, so hopefully it'll be really good.
Nice, yeah. It's been a minute. I like Louisville as a city. I lived there for a little while. It's a really nice place, so it's always great to go back.
Great. Good. Well, looking forward to it. And then, of course, you got 2020 coming. That website you mentioned, is that where we should keep up with you as far as like when your schedule becomes public and when you know when you're going to be places?
Yes, I have a page. I have a news page that I keep. I post projects and shows that I'm going to be at and other big announcements. Also media.
Well, that's great. Now, once again, the Kickstarter is going to conclude on Saturday, November 2 at midnight, looks like. Yep. And so looking forward to that. Based on your success with the other Amiculus things, I have a good feeling about this one. I think this is going to come through real well. And you still got a goodly number of days, but don't wait. This is the time to get on there and do it. You know, if you can get there's some people who are able to get their Kickstarters, accomplished. You get their goal within like the first day or so. That's rare. It's, yours is such that it'll be something you'll have to pay attention to for a while. But I tell everybody, if you really like these kinds of things, this is the time to get in there. Support it now, and you'll help Travis not have too many heart attacks when he looks at it, because they always call it the daily heart attack when you look out there and nobody is pledged in 24 hours, and you just kind of,
yeah.
But I think this will be a good one, because I'm really looking forward to it, especially when you got a new story. That's going to be really interesting. I can't wait to see that.
Thank you. Yeah, believe me, I'm looking forward to it too.
Okay, well, keep up the good stuff, Travis. I can't wait to see what your other stuff's going to be as well as this one. I'm dying to see the new story. So, you know, I just love the way you do stuff, and I always appreciate the stories you tell. So I can't wait to see the ones you've got coming for us.
Fantastic. I look forward to it, too.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Gilbert Deltrez, creator of many good things, including, gosh, let's see. Well, of course, I always liked Under the Flesh, but that's always a good one. It's always going to be one of my favorites. But you've got a new project coming on right now, and it's Indiegogo this time, and it's called Galactic Rodents of Mayhem. How you doing, Gil?
Hey, Wayne. Thanks for having me back on. Yes, been doing, been keeping busy.
Wow.
So Under the Flesh isn't abandoned. Just gotta get that out there. We're just like every good thing, you know, how you take a little break. You know, Star Wars had their nice break. Like when we come back, we're definitely gonna come back and hit it real hard.
Oh, good. Now, talk about the new project, because when I looked at Indiegogo and you've got, you know, music playing in the background and you've got, you know, all kinds of, you've got it sounds like a rock band performing the theme song. Man, where did all this come from? I mean, are these people you know, or did you, you know, hire these people? How did you do it?
Yeah, so basically, the theme with Galactic Rodents of Mayhem is trying to bring in fun kind of back in comics a little bit. And for me, I remember Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is what I grew up on. So I kind of wanted to capture that nostalgia, that goodness, and pretty much add a new twist to it. And you can't have that and not have a theme song go with it. So I wrote up a song in my head, and then I was just pretty much trying to find a way to make it happen. And I had worked with the guy who did my soundtrack on Lair when I had relaunched it on Indiegogo, and he just took it away and he blew it away. And people that hear it, they're like, man, it's still stuck in their head. So we kind of got that going. So that's kind of how that came about. So I think the power with comic books is that they're visual, but at the same time, if you got like an audio component, they're very cinematic. It's like, I think it goes hand in hand. And I think that's what helped pushes the immersion for Galactic Rodents of Mayhem.
Because people have already heard it, because I brought a little bit down of it so I could put it as the opening music for
So
they should have heard a little of that by now. So that's right. I'm really amazed by it. Just, you know, not many indie people have their own soundtrack and their own you know, for groups that performs. I mean, are these guys going to tour or something? What's going to happen with
them? he was inspired. I told him what we had in mind. And once I said it's like based, I think it's like a power anthem, Saturday morning cartoons inspired by like the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. And he was inspired and he put that together with what I had written down. And I was amazed. It's rare that you get something back that surpasses your expectations. And he got like a kind of rock ballad type, Frank Zappa sounding. It's just like he put a, it has something going for it, and it just helps with the project.
You can play the music while you're reading the book.
If you want to do that, have the headphones on, it definitely helps. We even have a symphonic track as well. Yeah. And that went Star Wars inspired. Yeah.
Yeah, because I saw that. That's part. If you go to Indiegogo, and I guess the way you get to it is Galactic Rodents of Mayhem with an exclamation point, Volume 1 is the way you do it. And title sequence or opening sequence or something, that's the way you call it. And that's further down. But you get to watch, you get to see both of those if you go to the Indiegogo. Now, I've got to ask you before we get into the book, how come Indiegogo as opposed to Kickstarter?
All right, so here's the thing. I did two nice campaigns, actually a few on Kickstarter, and with Lair, I initially launched Lair via Kickstarter, and the initial goal we had was around 10K, and we had one drop pledge that really kind of hurt. And with Pistoleta, again, we had like a big drop pledge that kind of went into the calculations. So sometimes when you wait for the end goal and you're able to fund and then all the payments get processed, sometimes you might have that one big reward that doesn't pan out. And so I wanted to go with Indiegogo because I know that when people back, they get charged right away. So I know they won't be like an instance of a drop pledge, so to speak. So, I mean, if someone wants a refund, they could always ask for a refund. But in this case, that's why, because it was such a big goal. And for example, I have one reward. It's $1,000 that someone actually backed. It's kind of like what Rich Rivera did with Under the Flesh first time around, where you're like a mainstay character. So they'll have a mainstay anthropomorphic character in our universe. And that's $1,000. So let's say this happened on Kickstarter, and then that was one that was just a drop pledge. That's $1,000 that I'm not going to have, that I can't, you know, count on for my calculation. So I took a gamble, but I am going to be bringing Galactic Rodents of Mayhem to Kickstarter with like a variant exclusive cover, because I know that each platform has their own kind of fandom in a way. Like there are people that just gravitate towards whatever respective platform. It's like you got people that shop at Walmart, you got your other people that shop at Target. So it's kind of like some people just crowdfund on Indiegogo, some on Kickstarter. So I'm still building my audience. So I will be launching both projects on there.
That's cool. Now, the fixed goal, it says, is $15,000. Mm-hmm. And as mm-hmm. we're recording this, you mm-hmm. are pretty far along. With that, I don't want to do it because it's a couple days before this actually posts. But you're at this point, about halfway there, which is pretty good. And you've got, you know, when does it actually conclude? What date does it end?
It's going to conclude, I want to say October 19th, if I'm not mistaken, the 19th or the 20th, I believe that it'll conclude. And we got Steam. We got a lot of backers, almost 150. We got over 7K. And the reason why it's such a steep goal is because when I was creating this project with Sebastian, who also did Lair, we wanted to do something fun. And initial idea was to keep it to 40 pages, but the more I was learning about our story, the more we were brainstorming and things were coming together, it was like, it's like it couldn't be wrapped up in 40 pages. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to just write it organically. And when it wraps, it wraps. And it came up to over 100 pages. It's like 104 pages. So that's a reason why, because we got top quality art. So imagine the artist across 100 pages. Imagine a colorist. We have an amazing colorist across 100 pages, the letterer. So that's why. And then with your printing, shipping is not, in full transparency, shipping is not even included within that 15K. That would be something where stretch goals would help equalize, or it was just a small price to pay. I just literally out of pocket to ship just to get this off its feet. And sometimes sacrifice you need to get done for an ambitious project like this one.
Now, there's a picture, what looks to be the cover on the Indiegogo page. It's got, let's see, 1, 2, 3 characters on it. And, of course, it's got the Headshot Comics logo on the upper left and all that good stuff. And I'm always fascinated because the art looks really good. I have to say, the anthropomorphic, you know, the mice. Mm-hmm. I'm always kind of, you know, I always have to think back to David Peterson when he did Mouse Guard. The reason why he went with Mouse Guard with mice was because they were always vulnerable and people could identify with them or relate to them. You know, oh my gosh, these poor little mice are struggling and all stuff. That's not the case with your book. These are very big. You know, the one guy with the great big huge gun is like huge guy. Talk about who the, maybe we should do that. Go into the characters. Yeah.
So what makes Galactic Warrants of Mayhem interesting is when we were coming up with this fully anthropomorphic tale, I want to do something fun. And for me, it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I'm like, you know what? Star Wars, there's been a lot of talk with Star Wars, disappointment with it fans and how the later iterations been going on. I said, you know what? I want to mix that. So I want to have something like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Star Wars had a baby. But they had a capybara baby. And Wayne, I don't know if you watch a lot of the nature shows, but a capybara is the largest rodent in the world. They literally grow to the size of a boar, over 180 pounds, even up to 200 pounds. And what makes them so interesting is not only that, they're the largest rodent, they're also semi-aquatic. They can hold their breath for up to 5 minutes underwater. They can swim underwater. And this is what sold me. When we're trying to find the animal, because when you go anthropomorphic, you got to find the animal. You know, what is it? You know, we've seen turtles. We've seen everything. And we've seen rodents, right? But I'm like, hold up. My artist sold me on this. He's like, a capybara. I'm like, what? A capi what? I didn't know what a capybara was. I had to Google it. But this is what he sold me on. He said, they're the most chill, mellow animals in the world. They're so social. They get along with almost every animal species. I couldn't believe him. He's like, turtles, birds, anteaters, monkeys, you name it. He said crocodiles. He said even crocodiles. I couldn't believe it. I Googled it, and there's more than one picture of capybaras with crocodiles, so they definitely get along with crocodiles. And that was the inspiration and fuel to make this happen. And that's how everything just started jiving and synergizing, because if it wasn't capybaras, it wouldn't be like – it couldn't be guinea pigs. It just couldn't. It has to be capybaras, and they're amazing, and we're just going to bring more awareness to these awesome creatures, these rodents that are located mainly in South America. But again, that's what created the fuel. That's what created the fuel for it. And we, like you said, the characters, we got three. We have Bash. He's our main tank type character. We have Ripple. He's our mellow hot shot he's a pilot with the shades. And then we got Mona Lisa, who's our balance of discipline and attitude. And this is what we're trying to bring back, just fun, awesome escapism, but at the same time bring a deep message that you wouldn't expect with this kind of book.
So what's the story about?
So basically the story centers around these three capybaras, right? And they're bounty hunters, but 100 million credit bounty has literally been placed on their head by space. And space is what I like to call Space Police Authority and Command Enterprises. They're basically a military police organization across the universe. And somehow they got their sights set through space, and they basically are on the run from one of the generals, one of the main generals, and he is called Dark Raider. So it's kind of like my play on Darth Vader and kind of my play on, you know, like the Empire, but this time they're not the Empire. These are like the good guys, so to speak. They're the, you know, the military police. And, you know, basically the father figure of the capybaras is a gecko. His name is Gangon the Gecko. He's a tri-wielding gunslinger. All right, so he could try wield three guns. I'll leave that up to the imagination, or I definitely don't want to spoil that, but that will be explained. But he's the father figure of these capybaras, and he has a dark history with Dark Raider, and he finally been found. And with the capybaras there, it's basically a high octane, you know, chase. Throughout most of the books, I want to say 75% of the book is basically this chase where we see how the characters, you know, unlock and see how they become what they are through a chase scene. It's like a challenge. It just came up that way too, and I thought that's what make this book fun. I wanted to do something where I felt readers would enjoy reading as much as I enjoy writing it. So I think it's going to be very special.
So they know each other when we're starting out?
Yeah, yeah, they're siblings.
Oh, they're siblings. Okay.
They're siblings. I should have said that. Yeah, they're siblings. So basically, these three characters, they are siblings, and their father figure is a gecko.
Okay, because and I looked at them, they don't resemble each other very much. That's what. That's why I was thinking they're, you know, usually yeah. the very origin story usually brings the three of them together, and they discover yeah. that they work better.
No, this one, they're siblings. It just happened there. You know, that's how they came out.
Oh, cool. Well, that's interesting. That'll be fun yeah. to see that for something a little different. I did want to update something. You were talking about the fact that you could become a character. I didn't realize it's $200 to do that. You've gotten one out of 10 of them.
Yeah, so that's what we call the anthropomorphic cameo, where there's going to be a lot of real estate in this book. We're doing an 8.5 by 11.5. It's like this big European style, but it's going to be, you know, a trade paperback because it's over 100 pages. So what I want to do with this book, because I know what crowdfunding, sometimes people get kind of bummed. They got to wait so long for the book to be done. Mm-hmm. But when this book is done, you're going to have a meaty story. It's like a binge-worthy session here. You know, some people like binge-watching stuff on Netflix. I'm giving you a binge-reading session with this graphic novel. And the anthropomorphic cameo reward is basically going to be a lot of real estate. This reward is like, say there's a character you want to see. I don't know. Let's say a chicken. Let's say a pangolin, right? Let's say a frog or whatever. Like whatever you want to see, you give us the details. We'll work it in the background as an Easter egg. And on top of that, our artist Sebastian is going to give you a black and white sketch, full sketch of your anthropomorphic creation, along with some other goodies that we got in there. So you're definitely going to get some good stuff with it.
Very cool. Very cool. So, okay. So is this a one-time deal or do you have more stories in mind for these guys?
The idea, hopefully, if we can get this one funded, would be to do a trilogy, have a nice 3-volume setup, and then if we do a fourth, it wouldn't be a continuation. It'd be like a prequel of sorts. And then from there, maybe jump on different stories within the universe. I mean, I get how sometimes you can have a story go on mm-hmm. and on and on. I kind of want to do that, but then take a break, do some other stuff, and come back. And I think that's how you make your stories fresh and you know, they don't get hit with fatigue or exhaustion. You know, sometimes you just got to let things breathe. So it would be a trilogy and then a prequel.
Okay, interesting. With the prequel, because now, see, again, now I want to go back to how they came together. Is the prequel going to show
there you go.
Their so origin?
Yeah, so the prequel, like in our volume one, we touch up on the origin a little bit, and there's much of inner turmoil with how the group kind of got together. Now, with the prequel, you'd show the father figure. We'd see basically the father figure, how he taught our capybaras the ways of the bounty hunter trade or the bounty hunter life. So basically when he adopted them and then moving on until their, you know, adulthood, we just see different stories and how – they grew as a group.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
As a unit. Yeah.
Now I got to ask, of course, who are the bad guys in this thing?
You're gonna have a lot of bad guys.
Okay.
Basically, we have Dark Raider, right? He's our main antagonist. Guy, yeah. But we also have the Sniper Vipers. They're a duo of Sniper Vipers that are, you know, capybaras. Unfortunately, they are prey to snakes, as much of a lot of animals in the animal kingdom. So I had to do some Sniper Vipers there. And we also have a shark. We have like a bounty hunter shark who basically has three different forms of himself throughout the first volume. And so there's a lot of enemies coming towards the capybara way. So you're going to see a lot. There's a lot of variety and there's a lot of fun. And you're not going to be short of villainry.
Because I look on the Indiegogo page and I see the shark that you're talking about. Yeah. He's there. He's a great big guy and he's got a mouse or something with great big ears. And then there's a gecko-y guy. Is that the main guy? The trainer?
That's gonna be the father figure right there. This is going real back into how he pretty much came into adopting the capybaras. And the little possum, I mean that little mouse thing is like a possum. And then the shark, we got Draco the shark, and then we got Gengon the gecko, and they're on a mission. And that's how I start. So basically what I'm doing is I'm showing just the first two pages of work as it comes in. These are work in progress pages. So basically we still got to get the colors on them, but I put them up there so you can see the quality in just the inks alone. Mm-hmm. So pretty much, I know I got a hefty goal. If we fund, great, we got colors. Now say for some reason this thing doesn't fund, mm-hmm. and I got to come back to the drawing board, I would mm-hmm. bring everything back except making the book color. I'd shave off a few thousand right there just in not doing the book color, and then maybe use that as a stretch goal incentive, or maybe release a future edition where we could actually put colors on the book. But just to show you the quality with Galactic mm-hmm. Warrants of Man that we're putting up.
Art looks great. I mean, as far as that goes, I've got to ask, though, is this like Kickstarter in the sense that if you don't get your 15,000, you don't get anything, or – how's this
yeah,
work?
So Indiegogo has where you can do a flexible campaign where whatever you get, you can keep. Mm-hmm. In this instance, they also have a fixed goal. And here I'm going for fixed goal, go big or go home. And just hopefully we can make it. And if not, there's always plan Bs, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's ambitious, but yeah.
Yeah, the art looks really great. And the pages, you can see the development of them, the black and white up through the mm-hmm. color. And then, of course, the lettering and stuff all comes in. I'm going to be curious to see how this goes. And, of course, you've got lots mm-hmm. of other animals and stuff like that, too, not just the rodents. You've got other things around too, like a bird yeah. who says I got 650 trillion egos.
Yeah, so that what we have there, these three pages that are completed that I put on the Indiegogo campaign, this is kind of like, I want to say, maybe this is the pitch to the reader. This is like a pitch to them. This three-page story, it shows how the capybaras got their flagship. Mm-hmm. You know how Star Wars, Han Solo, they got the Millennium Falcon. Well, mm-hmm. we have the Burning Rose. So this three pages, it shows a little intro to the characters, a little intro to the universe, and shows how they got their ship. But it's not attached to the story, but it's part of the universe. It's part of the canon. But this three pages is a little, we just want to do something fun, is what Sebastian wanted. And he challenged me to write a three-page kind of set story, and I did. And mm-hmm. that's just, if you guys read that, and you like it, you're gonna love, guaranteed. If you like the anthropomorphic anything in your life, you're gonna really love Galactic Rodents of Mayhem.
Now, I noticed too that you do different versions of this. It's the, I guess you've got what they call the digital deluxe. Mm-hmm. Apparently, that's one you can read on your iPad or whatever. Those things. Then mm-hmm. you've got the printed book mm-hmm. as the next thing you've got, and mm-hmm. that's when we get into the collector edition. Mm-hmm. Two signed books. I get you can get more than one. The Headshot mm-hmm. comic pack that includes Lair and Pistolera mm-hmm. and the premium edition. Then mm-hmm. You get premium edition looks like a shirt.
Yeah, the premium I think is a shirt, and then we have I think the team edition where we add a shirt and a cap. And then we have I think after that we have the anthropomorphic cameo, and then we have an original art page mm-hmm. where if you get a Sebastian, he's doing a few select pages traditional. Mm-hmm. He pencils, he inks digitally, but then we have select pages that he's going to pencil old school. He's going to ink old school, and those pages are a beauty, and they're really big. You'll get that in addition to some other things. And then I think what else we have is like a director's cut type thing where I'll print out the script and I'll have some notes there that Sebastian and I had along the way, and that will be signed. And with that, you'd get a character sketch. Mm-hmm. Sebastian did some really awesome character sketches with our other campaign with Lair. So nice that it was hard for me to even let go. I mean, he's based in Uruguay, so he mailed it to me, and I had Dr. Octopus sketch that was just beautiful, a Gambit sketch that was just so nice, fully colored. I mean, he goes all out. And you'd be getting that in addition with some other goodies.
MP3 I see there. Is that the theme song?
That's the theme song. So, I mean, you could always go on YouTube and hear it, but if you want to have it, in your personal audio device, we'll definitely have that over. And if for somehow we get into stretch goals, whoever backs at that tier will get a soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. So, you got lots of good things on this, man. This is really sparkling with these good things.
Just trying to just, put out good quality content, just because there's a lot of great stuff out there and you got to put up.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the thing. My only fear about these things is the fact that this is retro on some levels. Mm-hmm. Although I have to tell you, the Turtles are still going. I mean, there's a Batman Turtles. They just did like the third or fourth one.
Yeah, they got a little crossover going on. Yep. Yeah. And that's the thing. I know there's still an audience, a big audience that kind of long for this type of stuff. So what I'm trying to do, at least with Galactic Road and Samayam, is trying to say, like, hey, listen, we love and respect the Turtles, and I grew up on that, and I'm a fan, hardcore as they come. But I'm trying to say, hey, we could still do like a new story, a new twist, based on the good old stuff, and still make it fresh. And I think that's where we get the capybara animals in there. People don't know what capybaras are, and in our universe, there's no humans in our universe. It's all fully anthropomorphic, and it's like in this Star Wars type, Guardians of the Galaxy type universe where each planet is like their own race. And then you have some few planets that are melting pot populations, and these planets that are usually, you know, cesspools with danger and lawlessness. So we got a lot working here. So if you into any of that kind of stuff, you're going to find a lot to like with Galactic Road and Some Mayhem, especially because we play on a lot of the old stuff, and there's references from video game culture, anthropomorphic stuff, TV shows, movies. Forget about it. You'll see a lot of cool references as well. So it's going to be something that people would enjoy, and that's all that I wanted to do.
Now, something else we should point out, too, is towards the mm-hmm. bottom of the page, it mm-hmm. says Meet the Cast, and you've got more information about Bash and Mona Lisa and Ripple.
Yes.
And you show the ship as well.
Yeah, and we show the burning world. Yes.
Fan art. Where did you get fan art? Because the book hadn't even come out yet, and you've already got fan art. How'd you do that?
Yeah. So what I did was I was just trying to create a way to just kind of get some kind of attention, some kind of buzz. So I just on social media, I'm like, hey guys, you know, this is, I got a campaign going on. I mean, we do a contest. You know, we'll take fan art up until October 31st. Give us your fan art. Every entry will get a digital PDF. And, you know, the top three entries, you know, they'll get a physical copy of Galactic Rodents of Mayhem if we fund. And if not, we'll have Lera Pistoleta. So they're going to get something.
Okay, because I also noticed, too, that not many people do this, but you've listed what the stretch goals would be.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I'm not used to seeing that. Usually people wait until they get the goal, and then they start announcing they're going to have stretch goals. But you've got them listed down there. You've got stickers and bookmarks. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of things in there, the pinup you were talking about, all the good things. So yeah,
we definitely have a guest pinup. I felt like if we would because here's the thing with Indiegogo that's also kind of different from Kickstarter, or less. I think they don't do this, but because I did Pistolet, I didn't see this option available. But with Indiegogo, when you launch a campaign and it funds, you have the option to convert it into what's called an in-demand store. So basically, your campaign remains live, and people can still back your book. Mm-hmm. So since this book is going to be up until, let's say if we fund, it's going to be until April. You figure like that's when I expect to deliver it. So you figure from November to December, you know, January, we're going to have a lot of content being pumped out from Sebastian and the team. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of promotional material. And you're still going to have new backers coming in that probably didn't even know. And probably like, what, this funded? Yeah, I want it. Okay, good. Well, you can get it. Mm-hmm. So that's where they'll see maybe as we gain a little bit more traction, we'll unlock this. Okay, well, everyone that back will also get this. And so that's just a way of, you know, incentivizing and just trying to keep the, you know, options open and bring more to the book.
Because I think you may be the first person I've talked with who's using Indiegogo. I've always seemed to talk with people at Kickstarter before.
Yeah. So Kickstarter is amazing, and I'm always going to have Kickstarter books. I even got next month, believe it or not, I'm teaming back up with J.L. Giles. And he's done a lot of Marvel work, and now we got to a rhythm where we're reuniting, mm-hmm. and we're going to do these one-shots, like these 30-page one-shot stories to kind of like build up our tandem, our force as a storytelling duo, and then we're going to jump back into Under the Flesh. But what we have coming out is called The Deep Dark, and that's basically Lovecraft meets Jaws in a 30-page one-shot. Okay. And the script is already being finalized, so Kickstarter, you're going to get some stuff, you know? So I just ping pong back and forth. I got to be prolific, Wayne, just because I'm building my audience. So I just, I figure if I just put more stuff out there and people read and like certain things, they're going to know, okay, this guy's serious.
Mm-hmm. Well, great, great. That's, you know, anything you do to get the audience built up and people are interested in doing those kinds of things, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But I'm always going to pitch you on Under the Flesh because that was my first love when it comes to your stuff. So
I appreciate that. And I told JL, hey, listen, we're coming back. And this is the whole point. We're doing these other stories to build that audience. We learned a lot with Under the Flesh. I learned a lot. And what I learned – I want to keep on doing, and I want to bring that back, and it's going to be even more epic the more that I've learned since then, and JL's art style as well has developed. So when we get back on that to close it out, it's going to be something real special.
I got to ask you something about this, because, you know, do you pronounce it Grom when it's G-R-O-M? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's just something that just sounds good off the tongue, okay. Just to say, and just, yeah, as a promotional thing too. Yeah, it just worked out that way.
Because I understand that you've got a young son that you're raising these days.
Yes, I do.
Thinking that maybe this might be something that he might enjoy when the time's come for him to start reading?
I would love that, and it's not because he heard the theme song and dances to it every time, but you know, it's not because of that. But we even have Geico, right? Geico has a gecko, right? Mm-hmm. If you've seen the Geico commercials, right? So in the Tampa Bay Con, they had like a little booth and they were giving out prizes, and I got a gecko, right? Mm-hmm. Little toy figure. So I put it when we drive out, he's in a little car seat, and I put in his little pocket holder, and I say, "That's Gengon the gecko," like from my story. And he's like, "Gengon," he looks at it, he points at it. So in a silly way, yeah, Wayne, I would love. That would be the ultimate dream if we can get a hit to the point where, or not even a hit, just the fact that he could grow up on that would be awesome, where I have a material through crowdfunding to show him, or, that would be amazing.
Because it screams animated series to me, I could see this being on like Netflix or, any of those. It used to be, I would think, Cartoon Network, but I don't think Cartoon Network so much anymore. They're not. They're doing largely maybe your son's age kind of stuff.
But yeah,
there's a lot of us who are adults that still enjoy animation. So I'd like to see this could really work well on say Netflix, like I said, or any of them. I think this would work well with.
Yeah, and interesting enough, with Pistoletta, I don't know how, but a producer somehow caught wind of Pistoletta and was just. He told me through Kickstarter message how he came across it. He said he's working on a show that's coming to Netflix. And me, I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I don't get high hopes for anything. Yeah. But he's like, something about your book stuck with me, and he wants to do something with it. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see. So, there's talks, but these things take time. I'm not getting high hopes. I'm being practical. But the idea is, yes, if Pistoletta is an evidence to that and the stuff I'm putting out, definitely Grom, Galactic Rodents of Mayhem, definitely shows that it has a mainstream appeal. And I think in the future, everything is going to be exclusives. Like Netflix has this. Well, Hulu has that. Amazon Prime has this. HBO got that. So I feel if you have like a cemented kind of story going on, you could pitch that and sell that. And once we get to the convention circuit, getting more eyes on Grom, it's going to be something special. So hopefully it all starts with the crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you just mentioned now something I was going to ask about, and that is conventions.
Yes.
Are there any conventions you got coming in the near future?
Right at this moment, I'm only looking towards next year. And if that happens, I would definitely try to get – put it like this. If Galactic Rodents of Mayhem funds, I want to be in New York next year with the finished book and a table. I need to make that happen. So if it funds, I know I could start looking it's October. It funds, so I could start looking literally – a year from now to try to book, and that would be amazing. So I would try to look at Baltimore, because I remember off air you saying that it's comic book oriented. Mm-hmm. So that would be one that I'd look to do. Mm-hmm. And definitely New York Comic Con, aside from perhaps maybe one based in Florida, maybe an Orlando MegaCon or SuperCon. I like to hit the Florida ones too. And all this pending, hopefully, if Grom funds, I'll have a finished book to push, and a beautiful one at that. So yeah.
Well, you might think – unfortunately, it's expensive, but you might think about San Diego too, because that's where Hollywood is and where a lot of the media stuff happens.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, man. I know it is expensive and probably crazy to even get a table there. I can't even imagine, but that's something I'd think about. That's a good point, yeah.
You don't necessarily have to have a table out there. You could go out there with your books and kind of go around and see other people's tables and maybe talk.
Won't you get kicked out for that?
No, I don't know why. There are many people I know who go to San Diego who never have a table. All they do is walk around. Let's say you get a signing somebody, maybe some indie place will pick up your book and sell it for you. You could do a signing at one of their booths or something like that, and that gets you in the door. And once you're in the door, you can go and talk to folks. But I would ask them about it. I don't know how you're going to how you would do those kinds of things. But it's just that that's what I hear people do. I mean, I know so many people who are – they go and they sit at somebody's booth or something, and they do an autographing session, and then they can wander the floor and kind of, you know.
That's crazy. Maybe I have to team up with Rich Rivera, see if he can do a guest signing on his cavity.
We'll see about that. You never know. Stranger things have happened. Well, Gil, you're doing wonderful stuff. I can't wait to see this. It's April, you're saying, before we'll probably see a lot of this stuff come to fruition.
Hopefully, if it funds, yeah, we're looking around April 2020, complete 100-page book for our backers.
Yeah, so what we all got to do is just like say, I always tell Kickstarter people, don't wait until the day, because it's we got to make sure we get in before the thing comes to a conclusion, because that'll help the. That gets people's attention just as much as the content itself will. So
right on, I appreciate that.
So what's the deadline again? When was the day that we're
October 20th, I believe. October 20th, yeah, is the deadline. So we still got about, I want to say, 17, 16 more days. We're closing in on a two-week period, yeah.
Yeah, from when we're recording. But don't wait that long. Go and do it now. You know, we don't want Gil to go on every day and say, oh, my gosh, nobody's pledged again today. The daily heart attack that we always talk about.
Yeah, crowdfunding stress it's not for everyone, and I wouldn't recommend it to my worst enemy. But yeah, guys, I appreciate it. If you take a look, share. Shares are good too. Just sharing it out definitely helps get more eyes on it. And like I said, if you like the anthropomorphic anything in your life, you'll have a lot to enjoy with Galactic Rodents of Mayhem.
I'm looking forward to it, Gil. That should be great fun. Galactic Rodents of Mayhem. Go to Indiegogo and look for it on there, and be sure to dive in and support so you can get your copy. And maybe you might find yourself in one of the pages of one of these books. Wouldn't that be
hopefully fun? So. Hopefully so. I appreciate Wayne for having me on the show to talk Grom, and always great to reconnect every time. I appreciate it, and have fun at New York Comic Con.
Okay, well, we'll talk with you again sometime soon, I'm sure.
Yes, you will. Thank you so much, Wayne.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.